Boston Celtics need 7 games. They've defeated the Miami Heat.
And the Boston Celtics will go to the NBA Finals.
This crowd is on their feet, and their Warriors are going to the NBA Finals again for the 6th time in the last 8 years.
When looking at this NBA Finals, it is really easy to give a take. Right? Like, Warriors in 7. Anyone can go on television this week and say that. And for the record here, by the way, I have. That is my take. That is my actual prediction that I gave on TV this week. But what is harder, a lot harder, I must admit, is having the financial courage of your convictions to put your actual money where your mouth is. Because I want to be honest about this too. Vegas is good at this. Way too good at this. They have algorithms and Monte Carlo simulations and all sorts of data that make it so that the house pretty much always wins. Unless you happen to be Bob Vulgaris.
Main things I'm watching for is kind of like the if-then, right? If they do this, then this team will do this. Like, what are all the counters to the counters?
So today, the number one bettor in the history of the NBA returns to dissect a finals for the ages. And he explains the particular way that he sees the game. I'm Pablo Torre. It is Thursday, June 2nd. This is ESPN Daily. Bob Vulgaris, I've invited you back onto ESPN Daily for the second time because I'm here to steal all of the thoughts in your brain. So thank you for joining us.
Be careful where you go with those thoughts in my brain, I suppose. thank you for having me.
So let's do the quick biographical recap here, Bob, because the last time you were on the show, of course, people need to go and listen to that episode because it's one of my favorites. It's about your tenure in Dallas. You were the director of quantitative research and development. You were the alleged shadow general manager. We talked about all of this. You were candid. You were blunt. But that is for another time. The reason I bring you on now is for the reason that you kind of got that job, which is you were... are the most successful bettor in the history of the NBA. And do you have a number? It's like 9 figures, right? 9 figures over how many years in terms of your winnings in total?
Yeah, over like 15 years. The thing that people don't wonder with that is like, oh, but how much did he lose, right?
No, it's fair question, Bob.
Yeah, it's net. That's the net number would be 9 figures. So yeah, but that was a long time ago.
Hold on. It's not that long ago, Bob, because I'm...
Feels long ago. It's like 2015, 2014. Pretty long ago.
It was many currencies and cycles in crypto ago. That is true.
For sure.
But I've been watching you, I've been reading you more than anything and listening to you. Just watch basketball. And for people who don't understand, like, yes, you're the data guy. You ran the analytics department of the Dallas Mavericks. You are one of the sharpest, most numerate basketball observers anywhere. But you're also a guy who, like, actually analyzed strategy, in-game adjustments. You would analyze and break down series for the Mavericks. And when you see what Vegas is feeling right now, right, about the Golden State Warriors, who are in their 6th finals in 8 years. Again, something Michael Jordan's Bulls did last, right? They're favored. Vegas has the Warriors as the favorite by a 60% sort of chance. What does that look like to you as somebody who has also been thinking deeply about who's going to win this thing?
I think it's a fair line. I don't think it's like atrocious or anything. The finals lines are usually a function of what they think the public is going to bet, what happened in the previous rounds. And so from that regard, it kind of makes sense. You know, Golden State went through Dallas pretty quickly in 5 games. It looked great. Boston struggled with Miami in 7. Some blowout losses there and some blowout wins, obviously. And then you have the fact that, you know, 4 of the 7 games are going to be in San Francisco. So the line itself is not like atrocious or anything. It's not a bad line. It's probably a fair line. I do think that if I had to rate Boston's chances of winning, I would certainly rate them as better than 40%. That's for sure. I would think they're probably better than 50% to win. So I would favor them in the series, but that's just me. So yeah.
But hold on. That's just you is exactly, I mean, you're the guy I want to talk to about this because the reason you feel that way, like top line executive summary here, why do you think the Boston Celtics are going to beat the Golden State Warriors in what is projected to be a very close and also insanely anticipated event.
You lost me at top line executive summary. I don't know what that means. No, I'm kidding.
You know what an executive is, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I would just say the defense that they have obviously is very good. The way they'll be able to handle Golden State's offense will be interesting. I think they probably will have some answers for that. I think that there's no weak holes on them defensively. I think the other part of it is they have some guys on offense that are just very difficult to defend one-on-one, who can kind of create their own action.
Jason Tatum specifically.
Yeah, Tatum.
Tatum
can shoot over anyone. Brown can shoot over anyone. They got a good balance. They don't really have a team that once you shut down this one thing, you're done. You're good. That's it. But I think like just more of the intangibles are just like the strength of their 1-5 is really, really, really strong. They don't really have any weak links at all. They're a completely unique team to play against. And I think Golden State certainly hasn't played a team like this. It'll be tough, I think, for them to match up in that regard. But we'll see. I don't know. They've got the experience. They've got, you know, obviously the best shooter of all time. That's a big thing for them. But I think that if I were making the line, I would probably make the line closer to like pick them, even with Golden State having home court advantage.
Well, I want to get to the Boston Celtics defense here and drill into that with you, Bob, because you're talking about that as part of the case for the Celtics. And I just want to do a thought experiment with you, because I look at that defense and Marcus Smart is obviously a defensive player of the year. But there are so many guys in that lineup that you could argue are actually better defensively than him. Like, how do you assess the hierarchy in terms of like who is the strongest defender? Who is the weak link in terms of that rotation?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, the main thing I would say is, if you're the best defensive player on your team, you better be guarding the other team's best offensive player. That has to happen. And I don't think that necessarily always happens with Smart. I think a lot of the times Brown is guarding that guy if he's a bigger wing guy. Tatum is guarding that guy. In this series, he's probably going to be guarding Curry a lot. So I don't know. I think he's a fine defensive player. I think the idea that he's like the best defensive player in the league, or he was this year, I think is... it's kind of absurd, but whatever. Like,
well, then it's not whatever. Who is the guy that you think should have won that award, and who is the guy in the Celtics who is more deserving than Marcus Smart?
I don't know that there's anyone who's more deserving of. Like, I think the idea was was okay. This is the best defensive team in the league. Let's think real quick who the best. Mark has to be Marcus Smart, so he's got to be the defensive player of the year. And
yeah,
it's
sure
not even. It's not even that he's not the best player on. Defensive player on their team. It's just there's not a clear hierarchy like there is with other teams where he's
clearly
far and away the best defensive player.
Do you have though a hierarchy where it's like, I'm gonna throw the names at you, right? Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Al Horford, Rob Williams, Grant Williams.
Grant Williams was probably more impactful defensively this year for them in the playoffs in some ways. Horford and Williams were because of the fact that they had to guard Giannis.
Yeah,
that's not a knock on Smart. Smart's just not guarding Giannis. It's also a function of who they played in the playoffs, who they matched up with. There wasn't a lot of like great matchups for Smart to really show his. But then this is it right here, right? This will be the series. He's going against Curry. But how often will he be matched up on Curry to start the play? And how often will he be matched up on Curry to end the play? And defense isn't really necessarily about one-on-one defense anyways. He is good at the other part of it. He's good at the orchestrating of the defense and doing all that other stuff. That's very important.
Flopping,
yeah. I mean, he's good at the hustle plays that show up. He's obviously has like a very high motor. If you want me to break out coach speak, like some of these guys do.
Yes. His will to win, Bob.
His will to win.
His stick-to-itiveness. Yep, motor.
Yeah, all of it. But I don't know that he's the most impactful defensive player on their team. But in general, the best defensive player, if you're not guarding the rim, you're probably not the best defensive player on your team in most cases.
What they're going to be up against in the Warriors offense and why they're well suited to defend the scheme that the Warriors run, all of that off-ball action. I mean, explain just how different the Warriors offense is from other offenses. Not just that the Celtics have played, but other offenses just across the league, the task in front of the Celtics now.
Yeah, to be clear, I don't know that their defense is well suited to the style. You know, you don't really know until you see it, because it's really that different. They don't, you know, the Golden State's offense is so much different than the rest of the league in terms of they run very few just like simple high pick and roll over and over. They don't spam pick and roll over and over again. There's a lot of off ball stuff. A lot of time their primary quote unquote ball handler is Draymond, who's not a threat to shoot and who's basically just orchestrating things while everything's kind of spinning around Steph. And so you know, compare that to a team like Miami, who is playing completely different style than that. But if their switch game is dialed in to the point where they don't have to worry about it, and it's just whoever guards them is whoever's around at the time, then I think that that'll be a huge positive for Boston. It'll be very difficult for the Warriors to score offensively versus this team if they're not able to cause some kind of communication breakdown. On the other side of that, I think though, where you have like the most glaring kind of advantage is, you know, Golden State's not going to be able to switch 1-5 versus Boston.
No.
They're not going to be able to switch Curry onto Tatum. They're not going to be able to switch Poole onto Tatum. So that's the part I think where it becomes interesting.
What you're asked to do defensively does not occur in a vacuum, right? It also will affect your fatigue levels on offense. And when you talk about Jason Tatum running around all the time, explain sort of the toll that can take and why that's part of the strategy here too.
Yeah, I think that's a big reason why the Warriors have such a good second half record in the second half of games is I don't even know if it's the physical fatigue so much as it's the mental fatigue guarding Steph. I mean, Steph is so transcendent in the way he plays that you feel like if you miss him for a second, if you just lose him for a second, it's basically like a 3-point shot, which is a layup for him if it's a wide open three. I think a big part of it is that is just the not emotional, but the mental fatigue it takes to stay on point with them at all times. And because it's such a different style where you don't know what's happening, you got to have your head on a swivel at all times. And I think maybe that'll be the one thing that'll give you an idea early on is how quickly will Golden State have to go to a more pick and roll style of offense versus Boston to succeed? And will that succeed?
All right, Bob, coming up, how Steph and the Warriors succeeded against your old team and Luka Doncic, and how they're going to try and stop Jason Tatum.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are wonderful pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more.
I mean, the idea of health, though, right? Like the human body, like nothing reiterates in sports the fragility of the meat sack that is the human body. Like you're watching a playoff game and you're like, oh, now everything's different because this guy's out.
For sure.
I mean, it's a triage ward right now, Bob. And it feels like for all of the analysis that you can do that is very granular and enlightened and forward thinking, Marcus Smart seems to, suddenly have a snowball, or not even a snowball, a volleyball where his ankle is, and you're like, well, I wonder what this is going to do for all of the work I just put into my analysis.
Yeah, but to be fair, I think that there's a handful of players, I think, Boston, I think, could survive with any other player being out other than Tatum. I think Tatum is their most valuable, their most key guy. They could kind of get by without Smart. They could get by without either one of the Williams. Horford, I think, might be a problem just because of the difference between Robert Williams and Horford, the style they play. But Tatum goes out, I just think they're done. They're dust. Golden State, I think, they lose Green, it's a problem. They lose Curry, it's a problem. And then after that, and then maybe Wiggins is turned into their guy now because he's the guy who's going to be asked to guard. Like, who is going to guard Tatum? It's It's Wiggins is going to have to match up entirely with Tatum the entire time. I think Klay can probably guard Jaylen Brown, but I don't think he can guard Tatum.
Mm.
And to be clear, I don't know if there's anyone who's really like, if anyone plays like a style of basketball that's really defense independent, it's Tatum because he can just shoot over anyone. He's that good.
Right.
He can get by anyone.
And that big. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, let's talk about the Andrew Wiggins question because that has been like, I mean, first off, it's been a question for years and years, right? Like, what the hell is up with this guy who has talent, all of this talent, number one overall pick talent, but does not seem to actually enact it, implement it on the floor until this year, really, with the Warriors. So you watched him go up against your boy, Luka Doncic, Bob, like do a job on him that you would describe how Andrew Wiggins defended Luka and what that presages about this series. Yeah.
Yeah, he did a great job.
Here they go again, but he declines it and turns it over again because it was deflected by Wiggins, Poole, Porter.
You're not obviously trying to like rip his dribble necessarily. What are your goals?
To make him work. That's it. Just trying to let him get comfortable. And every shot, everything he does is make it tough.
I think he's finally found a role that works. And his role is to rebound, defend, pick up full court, and then be the second to fourth option on offense.
It's a nice cushion, by the way, somewhere between 2 and 4 for the Warriors.
Yeah, and they have a very egalitarian offense, so it works that way for them. But he's been good offensively as well. Like they've made a lot of strides, and I think the way they play basketball has changed. The way Golden State has played basketball has changed a lot, especially offensively, where now they've got like a lot better shot selection. Like they're not banging in as many of these long twos that Wiggins used to take throughout his career. He's reduced a lot of those and turned them into threes.
Yep.
But you don't want him like running pick and roll with the ball in his hands or anything like that.
But in terms of what he did against Luka, what did he do in that series against your old team that you watch him now coming up with, you know, solutions against Jason Tatum potentially that makes you bullish?
I mean, what he did against Luka was very specific. Luka has the ball almost the entire game. That's just the style that he plays. It's like heliocentric, whatever.
Right. He is the sun in the solar system. You know where the sun's going to be.
Yeah, you know exactly what's happening. But I mean, look, he didn't. You know, Luka dropped 40, 42 in back-to-back games.
Right.
It's not like he shut the guy down or anything.
Well, this is what I'm getting at is like, what does it mean to do a credibly good job defending someone like Luka or someone like Jason Tatum in real terms?
It's not even the half-court defense part of it. It's, are you picking him up full court? Are you making him work? Are you challenging him on the other end? That's a big part of defending Luka is, are you making him work on defense? That fatigues him as the game goes on.
Yeah, so the strategy here then against Tatum, as you would see it, if you're trying to defend Jason Tatum, Bob, you are doing what? And does this entail, yeah, the other side of the floor too, as you're describing, right? Trying to tire him out, you know?
A little bit, but not as much because he doesn't have the ball. He's not walking the ball up the court, you know, 50 to 60 times a game or whatever the case may be, 100 times a game in some cases. You know, Smart's bringing the ball up. Brown can bring the ball up. I think that helps a little bit. And then the way that this is what they did really, really well versus Miami is Miami was guarding him in a way where they were switching. They were auto switching, but then they were doubling. So they switch into what's called switch into a red. So they'll switch. So now they'll hunt like a Max Strus. Now Strus is guarding Tatum. And then Tatum has the ball. And then a beat later, the other guy, Butler, whomever, will come and double team him hard. And Tatum's not good at making those reads really, really. Like he's not, if he's doubled, he's not like, making pinpoint passes like Luka is. He's not doing that at all, to be clear. It'll be fun to watch. I don't know. I still think that from my perspective, Boston's defense will have an easier time guarding Golden State than Dallas would have for sure, obviously. And I think on the other side, Boston will be able to do some things that I think with their size that Dallas wasn't able to do versus Golden State, or Memphis was a little bit, but not in a sustained fashion.
I'm always fascinated, Bob, by talking to people who really like, you know, again, dissect the game, study it, reverse engineer it, like how you watch a given possession. Because what you're describing here, right, all of the actions that are happening away from the basketball that are helping setting up what the basketball will ultimately do. What are you watching when you watch a game? Just like in practical terms, like, are you watching the ball? What are you mostly like paying attention to, trying to pay attention to at least?
I think a big part of when I started to become more successful was when I stopped watching the ball and started watching off the ball. Because then you get an idea for who really, really is impactful and who's helping. You know, what team is defending on, you know, they call it defending on a string, where the whole team is moving in concert. That's a big part of it. But the main things I'm watching for is just the, like, kind of like the if then, right? If they do this, then this team will do this. Like, what are all the counters? And then what are the counters to the counters? And how smart are these players at adjusting? How smart are the coaching staff at identifying the weak points, shoring up their deficiencies? That's more what I'm watching for. If something gets exploited, is that going to continue to be exploited, or are they going to make an adjustment? That's really cool. You don't see that during the regular season at all. But, like, you know, Dallas games 2 versus games 3, I mean, yeah, they went from being in on the road to home, well, that was a big difference, but the way they defended was completely entirely different. And what Golden State started doing was they weren't necessarily so concerned having Luka come up and be the guy to guard the screen, and so putting him in pick and roll actions that way. They wanted him to be the low man, which means they wanted him to be the help defender. They wanted to make sure whatever they were doing, either him or Jalen Brunson were the rim protectors, and guys like Kleba, who are the actual rim protectors, or Bullock were out on the perimeter.
Well, how much of this is like crazy like a fox, or just crazy, right? Like, how much are you able to sort of diagnose the strategy versus the, oh, they're throwing something against the wall because they don't have anything else to do here?
Some of it is just like, hey, let's try this. What I kind of struggled with a little bit, not in a bad way, but just like the idea that, like, you don't know how this will work. Like, how's that going to work? I have no idea how it's going to work, but we can try it and see. And that's kind of what science is. You have a hypothesis, you test it. The coaches who are willing to try different things, Nick Nurse, box and one, never practiced it all year and game, whatever that was, of the fucking finals. I mean, that's cool to me.
You're on a high wire act. I mean, I want to get to this though, Bob, because you're describing stuff that does not happen, as you said, very plainly in the regular season. And just give me the very, like, I guess to you, obvious reason why the postseason then is such a different sport than what we get for 82 games before, you know, April.
Yeah, it's the prep factor, and it's the magnifying glass that your roster construction and your lineups go under. And then there's just like the random matchup aspect of it, of like, who do you have to guard this guy? How is that going to work? What happens when this team does this? How are we going to adjust to that? And so it's the most exciting sport from a chess. It's chess, basically. And you have to be thinking all these different moves ahead. You have to have the count. That's where a guy like Luka is so strong, because he's able to do that offensively, where you throw one defense at him and he's got the counter for it already, and he's got the counter for the next counter, and he already knows. And that's also where Golden State's offense is like that a little bit, where they've got all these different actions that it's like they don't know exactly what they're running on every play, other than they're running an action, they're seeing how you react, and then based on how you defend is how it's like a read and react type of offense.
No, it's like an incomprehensible flow chart. But the guy that seems to be the chess master, Bob, that I always hear about, that I want you to explain to me how it is that he plays chess, is Draymond Green. Like, he's always identified as that guy. What actually makes him so good defensively and offensively in the ways that you're describing?
I mean, I think his IQ is on the level of, like, we talk about some of these guys who are just smarter than anyone else who they're playing with, in the sense that they know what's happening ahead of time. They can spot, they have like their pattern recognition is high. They, you know, Draymond watches a ton of film. He's a student of the game. He wants to get better. So his defense is, in that regard, is very good. But then also on offense, he's also aided by the fact that he doesn't have a great jump shot. And so teams like this idea that he's the conductor on offense is true, but it's like, it doesn't work without Curry. Like, I'm sorry. Like, it doesn't work without the little spinning piece above the top, like the little machine, like the watch doesn't work without that rotor on the top that's constantly moving. Mm. And so, with that being said, he's very good at like, okay, you're going to play off me. Great. I'm going to set a screen, hand dribble handoff. And now Steph has got, if I screen the guy, the ball handling guard, he's going to have a walk in three. Oh, you're going to play me up? Great. Okay, now Steph's going to cut back court. He's going to cut back door. There's all kinds of different things that he can do that he can do with the ball, with his passing, but a lot of it is aided by the fact that he's got these moving parts like Steph and Clay around them. He's like the perfect complement for that style.
Yeah, but what you're saying is that an orchestra conductor only is so good if his actual musicians, his first violinist, is the greatest violinist we've ever heard.
For sure. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, that's a big part of it. And then, you know, the interesting thing is how will they be able to score offensively with both him and Looney on the court versus this Boston defense will be very interesting, because now you're only guarding really one guy from three. Klay, obviously, you got to guard him. But Wiggins, you can kind of like get away with a late contest on him, maybe close out on him, maybe, you know, get him to fall into some bad habits with like some little bit more of like a long two. Klay, by the way, does that too, where he's just going to take some bad shots, some bad back downs. But I do think when you throw in the fact that you also have to play Looney for defensive purposes, it does become interesting, because now you have two non-shooters that you can basically just ignore and just make sure that you cover, you know, you get back on them when it comes time to, you know, protect the glass.
And speaking of covering, of protecting your behind, I want to ask you, Bob, about how all of this incredibly informed analysis might go horribly, horribly wrong after the break.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
This is where I want to ask about how, like, the Golden State Warriors, right? We're closing the loop almost, right? Like, the teams of 2014-15 when they won the title to now in 2022. But how different is this Warriors team from the teams that did actually win titles that were in contention year after year as you see it?
Well, they only won the one title without Durant, right?
Yep.
And so they had the 3-1 lead and they lost, obviously. How is it different? It's the same, really. It's very similar to those teams. It's very similar to the pre-Durant teams, in my opinion. Mm. The difference is, the other thing I think that people don't... These guys are old. They're not...
Steph's 34. Yeah, everybody's
sort of
like... Yeah,
it's like 34, 33, 32, whatever they are. And so if you factor that in, you factor in the level of athleticism that Tatum and Brown have specifically. Payton actually could be a wild card because he's supposed to be able to play, maybe. He could be a wild card for... He
Gary
could be
Payton
actually
the second. Yes, the best defender on the Warriors. Second best defender after Draymond.
No, but that could be interesting because where Boston does struggle is they can... I mean, both these teams can turn the ball over. Golden State does it more out of sloppiness. Boston does it over, you know, based on the fact they don't have like really, really good ball handlers. So like Smart's not a traditional point guard. I mean, Brown, it's like an adventure every time he tries to dribble the ball into anything. He's like walking turnover.
Seriously.
Almost. I wonder how well they'll be able to play offensively with two non-shooters versus this defense. We'll see.
Yeah. So, Bob, how does this go wrong for you in the sense of like...
It goes wrong all the time, Pablo. That's all. Everything just goes wrong. No, I'm just kidding. Woe is me. Bitcoin's down. No, I'm just kidding.
I know. Your world is fallen, Bob.
Yeah. I put up some Oscars scarves on Poshmark the other day to make it through the bear market.
I'm looking into your Zoom camera, and the floor-to-ceiling windows suggest otherwise for the time being that your world has actually crumbled. But I do want to find out how it is that faith in the Boston Celtics here might be the wrong idea. Like, what needs to happen for that to not go the way you think?
Boston's been to the Eastern Conference Finals a bunch. This is their first finals, these guys. Golden State's been there. They've done that. They're not going to wilt under the pressure of the finals. That's where it could go wrong, where it just takes them a while to adjust and acclimate to the surroundings. Guarding Steph is always a challenge.
It sounds like you're already beginning to imagine what it feels like to lose Steph for a second and watch him just hit a three out of the corner of your peripheral vision.
Yeah, I think they have a lot of advantages. I think the one disadvantage they have might end up being the biggest one, which is the lack of experience. And going to the conference finals is no joke. Don't get me wrong, but it's not the same as, they went to the conference finals a bunch of years where they just weren't really expected to win. Aside from that, they haven't really been like the team that's thought of as this year they were kind of thought of as the team to beat. I mean, I thought the NBA finals was the Milwaukee Boston series. That's what I said very early on.
Yeah.
This is the NBA finals.
I look forward to sending that particular soundbite to the Golden State Warriors and just having them. That's how this goes wrong for you, Bob, is that gets read on a broadcast. And then we realize that, oh, no.
There
oh,
you
no,
go.
You've motivated yeah, the dynasty.
Sure. I'm sure these guys really care what I have to say. Someone asked me the other day, they're like, they asked like, hey, did you see what Kevin Durant said? Hey, respond to this, Bob. And it was Draymond Green that already responded to it. Steve Kerr responded to it in a press conference. Like, oh, you want my opinion to go along with what are you talking about?
Bob Bulgaris, we always want your opinion on ESPN Daily, to be very clear. So thank you for joining us, man.
All right, man. Thank you.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. And if you want to go listen to that episode with Bob Vulgaris from months ago about his time with the Dallas Mavericks, it is truly fascinating and I highly recommend it. We put a link to that in our show notes. And yeah, I'll talk to you tomorrow.